This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we welcome KC Stands Up for Standing Rock activists Kit Kat on the phone from North Dakota and Mary Benrood. Join Monique Gabrielle Salazar, author of the new book Stand Up, Poems from Standing Rock, to discuss all things pipeline. Also reports from sister community radio stations in Berkeley and Ames. But first, I'm naturally with your headline news. Colorlines.com reports President Donald Trump continued his use of the 1996 Congressional Review Act, or CRA, on February 17th when he signed legislation to repeal another climate rule former President Barack Obama implemented to regulate the coal industry and protect streams and forests. The CRA allows Congress to reject any law Obama submitted to Congress on or since June 13, 2016, through majority vote and presidential signing. Congress voted to nullify the Stream Protection Rule February 2nd. The rule, which went into effect January 19th of 2017, worked, quote, to prevent or minimize impacts to surface water and groundwater from coal mining, end quote. While it would have preserved bodies of water and acres of forests, the regulation also would have helped protect the health and economies of communities who rely on said waters. Most are rural communities across Appalachia, where mountaintop removal is used to access coal through the practice, though the practice has been declining due to coal's ever-dwindling demand, in part because of the affordability of natural gas. Grist.org reports, a week after the buzzed about conservative carbon tax, a bipartisan group of 20 governors sent letters to President Trump and fellow governors imploring them to consider the benefits of renewables. The Governors Wind and Solar Energy Coalition asked the president to modernize the energy grid, support legislation to encourage offshore wind development, put funding towards renewables research, and streamline permitting. In the letter, the group attempted to appeal to Trump's vested interest in helping the rural communities he has promised to lift up. The coalition cites $222 million paid to rural landowners a year by the U.S. wind industry, the $156 million paid to landowners in areas of below-average income, and that 70% of wind farms are located in low-income counties. The letter sent to governors cited recent renewable wins in states such as Michigan, Ohio, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Colorado, states led by both Republicans and Democrats. And that's all for the news. At this time, I'd like to welcome Mr. Mike Murphy to the mic.
Thank you very much, Natural E. As Natural E said at the outset of the program, we're going to be looking at all issues with the pipeline, or as much as we can. We've got some activists here in Kansas City, and we have one we're hoping to get on the phone who's up in North Dakota. Also, we're going to have a couple different reports from a couple different community radio stations. And so there's so much to get to. I don't know where to start. But let's, Mary, I believe you were with Kit Kat. Were you one of the people that went to the Army Corps of Engineers a couple weeks ago? So let's, and you're going to have to get closer to the mic, but we're going to play some audio I queued up the wrong one, of you guys coming out of that and of your reaction having met with the Army Corps of Engineers, and then we'll I'll ask for your comment after we come out.
I think this is the beginning of more discussions with them, for dialogue. They were very respectful. They appreciate what you're all doing on behalf of their children and grandchildren, and a relationship has begun. There's been other Standing Rock Sioux tribe members that have met with them, so we are growing something. We're growing change. So in this efforts of goodwill, in our prayers, we're growing change is going to take root, and that needs to become strong. And so they extended goodwill. They were patient in listening to us, and they opened up doors for more conversation.
They gave us half an hour of their time. The commander was not there, okay. So the commander's executive assistant was there. Larry, the executive assistant, will personally deliver our letter to the commander. He gave us that commitment. I'm going to be following up in an email with him. As Mary said, a communication has been established, and we are not going to let it drop.
Okay, so that was, like, I think 2 weeks ago today, maybe? Mm-hmm. And what's changed since then?
Things are daily changing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the day after that, I think there was a ruling that came out. I think it was the Tuesday. We had just gone to the Army Corps of Engineer, and we understood that based on memorandum by President Trump, that they were not going to proceed with a comprehensive environmental impact statement. So we went there, we talked to them. I mean, one of my lessons from this, one of the daily lessons from this, is in the midst of feeling betrayed by the government, betrayed by this illusion that somehow there's some benevolent agency that's going to come and clean up spills and make sure the pipelines are safe, and that there's going to be testing done and environmental impact statements. I'm going to lose my train of thought. Somehow, in the midst of feeling betrayed, that I have learned by being at Standing Rock that I am in relationship with everyone. I'm in relationship with the militarized police. I'm in relationship with government officials. I'm in relationship with the Army Corps of Engineer. And this is this is a change for me. This is a change in the road. This is a long journey of resistance, but resistance that is based on compassion and love and growing relationships. And that's what I learned. So in our effort to reach out, to look directly in the eyes of the people at the Army Corps, to look directly in the eyes of the militarized police or people around, that we are beginning a human exchange and that we're going to continue to grow things, but still continue to resist and speak truth about what the consequences are of actions that people are taking. And no one can sit and say, this is just my job.
Right.
You know, so somewhere in that, this is the beginning of something that I recognize to be long-term, but the immediate things going on, you know, while my heart is breaking, I'm repairing my heart by understanding that I'm reaching out and to all the human beings around me.
Okay, well said. And I'm going to play another clip from you. This was actually filed from our sister radio station, KPFA, in Berkeley, California. And Ann Garrison is interviewing an activist who recently returned from Standing Rock there. And then I want you guys to comment on this as well.
Hanson Lee, you just returned from your third trip to Standing Rock. Could you tell us what you saw this time and how it differed from your first two trips?
Yeah, this time, because of the weather change and because of the artificial deadline has to be moved out of a potentially flooded zone, it disturbed everyone there. Most of all, there's not enough volunteer to move huge amount of teepees, yurts, tents, and all the fireworks and all the food and clothing. They all need to be properly moved either to higher ground or different reservation sites. But nevertheless, everyone is working very hard. Many folks are quite fatigued by day in and day out moving things and working, relocate a temporary building.
Yeah, I spoke to someone last week who had just arrived from Maine, and she said that the first thing she saw was a lot of people working their butts off. Does that sound accurate?
Yes, sometimes there's a moving vehicle arrive literally 10 p.m. and they call up on the action, so everyone jump in to move 2 to 5 tons of food out of the location to the different reservations, because those folks are driving almost 10 hours to arrive, so all this material can be relocated to the proper place.
They're driving 10 hours with a moving vehicle so that they can go down and load it up at Oseti Sacajawea and move it to higher ground? Is that right?
Correct. Okay. Either to higher ground or to different reservations so they can be safely stored.
Hanson Lee also said that he believes the Army Corps controls floodgates to protect the city of Bismarck that would allow them to flood the Oseti Sacajawea camp unnecessarily before the weather demands. He said over and over that he had been transformed by the decentralized collective spirit at Standing Rock, where no one was giving top-down orders, but everyone seemed to know or find out how they could most helpfully get to work. He said that the extreme weather conditions were unlike anything he had ever experienced and that they built character. Everyone, he said, realized that the struggle could not be maintained without collective effort. People take water bottles to bed with them at night, he said, so that they'll have water that isn't frozen to make coffee in the morning. In his evacuation order, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum accused the water protectors of creating a garbage and human waste problem that would pollute the Cannonball River when the melting snowpack flooded Oseti Sacajawea. But Hanson said that the system devised to collect human waste was one of the most impressive collective efforts at Standing Rock. He said that it was odor-free, but that it required constant wood fires to keep the waste from freezing so that it could be removed. Water protectors have accused local garbage collectors of driving to Oseti Sacajawea to dump garbage and blame it on them. Hanson Lee said that many of the water protectors who have been there through the winter are exhausted and that they continue to work long hours well into the night and they urgently need volunteer help now. He believes that the February 22nd evacuation order can be resisted with enough help. In Berkeley, for Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Ann Garrison.
Okay, I'll just open it up. Monique, Gabrielle Salazar, Mary Benrood, or Matthew Rutledge. Any comments on what we just heard?
First of all, I just want to say hello to everyone and welcome everyone that's listening in. And I want to say, Ate wakan tanka tate uyatopa unchimaka unchimaliye ekche wachisha la mielo tunkashlo. And just wanted to say why we're here, you know, and who I am as a common man, Matthew Rutledge, and welcome everybody with the open heart, you know, as this is our mother, our Unchimaka, is what we're talking about here, and we're speaking up for the water, the Mini Wachoni, and these languages are very essential to the way of life of Indian native people to this land. Their roots run really deep here. So here we're trying to preserve a way of life. And preserving that way of life is really the essential of what we're talking about here, because this Mini Wachoni is a spirit and it's working through us. We were born in water from the very beginning, and then we're going to die and go back to water and go back to this earth. And so a lot of the allegations is what they're talking about. Go back from 1492 of the struggle of Native people, Indigenous people from all over the world with the truth, living in balance and harmony with life. These ways of life don't profit, so they try to hide all these ways of life, of indigenous ways of life that don't profit, that use the tools, giving more than taking. So with the easement of the Army Corps of Engineers trying to stop and remove all the Oshete Oyate camp and the February 22nd, you know, there's a lot going on with the camp. And then also trying to remove all water protectors and take back land that as actually Standing Rock, the Hunkpapa Nation, from the 1851 and the 1868 treaties, where that land was stolen when they did assessments for Morton County. And so this land was already it's the people's land. It's a Hunkpapa relative's land, and they're trying to evacuate them. And so these water protectors here are trying to protect the Mini Wachoni for all of us. All the listeners here in Kansas City, that's going to be affected. 18 million people will be affected. It's not if the pipeline's going to break. It's when the pipeline's going to break. And then all of us will hear. We'll have to pull together, I guess, and find new ways to boil our water or to have clean water for our children here. And so we have to think really, really, really way further than our nose. And to me, that's what our politicians and that's what our government is thinking right in front of their nose, to profit off this oil that's come from the tar stands. And then it's all going to go all the way to the coast, and then it's going to be shipped to China. It doesn't even provide about 36 jobs to Americans. And with this going on, you know, there's a lot that we need to do. A lot of the headmans and Ames and people at Oshete Oyate are asking all water protectors to come back for February 21st and 22nd to make a stand and not evacuate these sacred lands, these burial sites that have been desecrated, these sacred sites of ceremonials have been desecrated, and we still have to fight for these rights in our cities here. If somebody desecrated a cemetery, you would go to jail. And that's, we're still violating Indian rights, civil rights, human rights for profiting, for putting people, for putting profit over people. And so we need to stop that as a humanity.
Okay. So in terms of so February 22nd is 30 hours away at this point.
Yes.
And so and so on the one hand, we heard this report where they're asking for volunteers. We've got to move this stuff. Like, if someone was listening and arriving right now and said, "Oh, should we go? Should we go?" Like, is it too late for someone? Like, Monique, you've all been up there. How long does it take you to get there?
It's 12 hours.
It's 12 hours
from Kansas City.
And it's formidable weather, right?
It definitely can be.
So it's,
not something
you should just, if someone's hearing this and just going, road trip, you know, like, it's something to be taken seriously.
Yeah, it's not an easy jaunt.
Yet they are pleading for volunteers at the same time. So
I think that makes it so that the people who are meant to be there go.
And so Kit Kat is up there now. And hopefully, we tried getting her on the phone right before we went on air. And she said, "I'll have to call you back. She's in the middle of something." So hopefully we'll hear from her. Do you guys know anyone who's besides Kit Kat, or that are on their way up there now are up there now?
I know several people that are still there, that have been there for several months, that are there at camp. As a lot of people know, you know, phone contact is inconsistent, Wi-Fi is inconsistent. So, you know, I have halfway conversations and then phone is cut off. I think that Kat is driving up there right now, and myself and most of us that have been there are struggling with not being on our way up there. Because not only is it the water and the land and the prayers and the community and the knowing that the knowing of what the potential suffering is with this February 22nd deadline, I personally was arrested up there and removed from one of the campsites and put in jail and, you know, handcuffed, put in dog kennels, witnessed, you know, sprayed with mace, all these things. I know that people I love and people that have dedicated, have sacrificed much are willing to stand may encounter things that cause them serious harm. And I'm concerned and worried and distraught, not only about the pipeline proceeding, but about the potential inhumanity that they will experience as they're standing up for their children and our children in the name of what's right and in the name of love and in the name of the water and humanity. So this is difficult. This is difficult. I do have, though, I have two numbers for people. It's probably, would be difficult for someone to go up there without having contacts. There's roadblocks. There's other obstacles to trying to find your way into camp and to be able to hold space and be present in a way that's helpful at this time if you don't have a history there. But I have the number for the district office in Omaha. They're asking for calls, and if that's okay.
District office of who?
Of the Army Corps of Engineers.
Oh, okay, okay. They're,
because of the weather, they've asked for an extension so they can humanely, the people, the women, children, or the elders and children that may want to leave, that they will have some more time to clean up and find a space to go. So they're pleading and asking that the Army Corps of Engineers will give them some time and respect that the weather has interfered with this process. And they're asking if people could call the district offices of Army Corps of Engineers in Omaha and also the North Dakota Army Corps of Engineers office to ask that respectfully that this deadline be extended from the 22nd at 2.
Are there any other upcoming dates we need to be aware of? Like, we know February 22nd is a big one. Anything else coming up? I mean, if you don't know the date, other things to be looking for? Or?
Native March.
Well, there's a March 10th is a Native March in Washington, D.C. But, you know, the date is now. I mean,
right.
I mean, this is a dead area. Once this pipeline goes underneath the Missouri River, I mean, if there's no water, there's no jobs, there's no crops, there's no anything. So there's not the deadline's now. You know, do you want to live in the United States in the Midwest? Then you should be there. You know, it's not of, well, if this happens or if that happens. No, once this pipe goes underneath the Missouri River, this is a dead zone. And only the people that know how to find water springs and drill wells will make it. Or if they move to California, which they're in a drought. So where are you going to go? Mm-hmm. You know? And also, do we, you know, the truth. Here's the thing that really is, we can't hide the truth. And as much as we want to sweep underneath the Indian Wars as we want to, and sweep underneath the treaties that have all been broken, not one has been honored, not one. This water and these spirits of the land are recalling all these hidden truths that are resurfacing on purpose to bring unity. You know, I want to say thank you, Donald Trump. It's unity, unifying the Muslims. It's unifying all the Mexicans. And it's unifying all the people. It's building bridges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I am thanking him for bringing this many people together as one to fight our oppressors. We can't live here without water. We can't live here without clean land, and we can't live here without clean air. These are the laws of the land. Land, air, water. These are the natural laws of the universe, of the universe, of the university, of the universe. And we have to follow these natural orders of land, else we won't survive as humans. And it's, to me, the deadline is right now. I've been up there 6 times. I lived there personally for 3 weeks at one time. I have 4 children, so it's really hard for me to live there full time. I have been threatened to go to jail. I have seen people been maced. I have seen people tear gassed. I have seen people shot with rubber bullets. I have seen people with water cannons on videos. These kind of things for peaceful protesting doesn't happen in everyday city. This happens on the reservations. Some people call them concentration camps. That's what I call them. I mean, it's just sweeping things underneath the rug that are rearing their ugly heads and that we need to address to the United Nations. This is a genocide.
Indeed. Monique, we haven't heard from you.
I would like to talk a little bit more about the chemicals that were used on the protesters. The last time that I was up in Standing Rock, I was privileged enough to go to a training given by the UN on how to give testimony at an official hearing. And it was followed the next day with an unofficial hearing of testimony by the leader of the small groups for indigenous people in corporations and businesses. That's not the technical name for it, but that's who he is. So they gave a presentation on the what they call crowd control weapons, CCWs, or quote-unquote non-lethal weapons. INCLO gave the presentation, and INCLO is a group of human rights organizations from across the world, including Sweden, Scotland, Argentina, the United States, the ACLU is part of it. And they basically laid it all out for us that 3% of the time they actually are lethal. And 15% of the time they cause serious damage, and 17% of the time they cause serious lifelong lasting damage. You know, these weapons range from the rubber bullets, which are actually live ammunition that's coated in rubber. Same for plastic bullets. It's live ammunition that's coated in rubber. The water cannons can be doused with chemicals, or sometimes in some countries they've used UV spray so that they can catch you afterwards and arrest you. The LRAD system is one that they send out particularly loud sonic waves where they can cause permanent hearing damage fairly easily. It actually hasn't ever been tested on anyone.
So let me ask a pretty basic question. When you say they... Who?
The police, the Morton County Sheriff's Department.
So this is at the county level?
Yes.
They have this kind
type
of...
they're all together. Hardware. They have a sniper at camp and a missile launcher at the drill pad.
Always.
It's for surveillance.
There was always snipers and militarized vehicles for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Soldiers.
Present. We had floodlights on us for weeks.
They still are on there.
There was a you would be playing and eating beef stew or singing and being in ceremony, and around you there was a military presence for months. This was a conflict zone, a war zone, for months. And an inconceivable sight in the midst of the United States.
And the crop dusters that they used to have a crop duster that circled camp 24 hours a day the first time that I went in November. And the last time that I went, it was not circling 24 hours a day, but it was dive bombing the camp after direct action. So they actually dive bombed the camp the day before I arrived on the 20th of January. And so when they dive bomb them, they release these chemicals. And there was a lady who gave testimony at the unofficial UN hearing who had had her hair tested. And they came up with three different chemicals that were in her hair. And the first one is phosphine. And phosphine is a pesticide, and it's a fumigant. It's they use it to pickle metals. It's a colorless gas that has an odor of garlic. And when she said that at the hearing, you could hear the collective gasp of everyone in the room because there was often an unfounded odor of garlic throughout camp. And this can cause liver and kidney damage. So symptoms are coughing, chest tightness, dysapnea, pulmonary edema, abdominal pain, thirstiness, jaundice, anorexia, weakness, ataxia, convulsions, etc. The other one they found was castor of pumice, which is a white powder, and it causes coughing, sneezing, diarrhea, anorexia, abdominal cramping. The third one was trichloropropane, which is actually a paint degreaser, and it also causes headaches, irritation to the eyes, nose, and throat, and it's a central nervous system depressant. There's a thing that we have at camp called the dapple cough, and pretty much everyone at camp has it. And it's, they're finding now that, there's some uranium in the soil and also Rosol, which is a rat poison that the landowners use to poison a bunch of prairie dogs. But the problem was they used 40,000 pounds of it, and you can only get it through the government. And it not only killed all of the prairie dogs, it also killed the tatanka and the bald eagles. The coyotes are not really being heard at night anymore. There's deer that have been found. So it's, you know, they sit here and they talk about, you know, trying to pin ecological terrorism on the water protectors for going down there and, you know, creating all this trash. And you're purposefully poisoning people and poisoning animals and poisoning the landscape and in turn poisoning the water that's there.
Also the notion is that people are being removed ostensibly for their own safety, but obviously if they're being hurled at,
they're being gassed.
Yeah, if they're being gassed, like perhaps their safety is not necessarily the
Morton County ordered 200 body bags about 2 months ago.
Really?
They have a stash of 200 body bags.
Wow.
And with the digital smoke signals with Myron Dewey and their team with their live feeds, I personally seen them, the, you know, all the dumpsters, they were putting snow in it.
Really?
And so they can have all these numbers of 285 truckloads coming out.
Oh.
Okay. Well, why are they dumping snow into these dumpsters, for one? Because they want a high numbers.
For
of,
weight, yeah.
But come on, you got, I mean, what about in North Dakota, all of the land they're destroying for corn, for ethanol, and then just lacing it with Roundup Ready? There's no way that because of the water protectors, the amount of trash in camping gear can poison the water.
That's right.
Right? It's not going to, the pipe is going to destroy the water. The pipeline is going to destroy the water. The amount of trash is only there because 700 people have been to jail and been evacuated. And that's why there's a lot of times, like I was there when there was 20,000 people there with the veterans, and then two storms hit, and people had to leave because a lot of people weren't prepared to live in North Dakota. It's 40 below.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
right.
And so a lot of people were coming because they told them to come. But in those two storms, they just evacuated because they wanted to live, you know. They weren't ready for this types of environment.
Of course.
We're thankful that they came there. But the thing is you, like we're saying, is being sustainable, being able to stand these extreme colds. And that's why they had to evacuate camp and left a lot of their packs, a lot of their tents, a lot of their stuff in the freezing blizzard, frozen ground that couldn't been evacuated at that time. So, and again, if the Army Corps of Engineers wasn't stealing this land, no one would have to evacuate, because this is the Standing Rock Reservation's land. It's not the United States government's land. This is not the Army Corps of Engineers land. This land was stolen. So, no, who's there? You know, we all know who should be here and who shouldn't be here.
Right.
We all know who's indigenous to this land, and we all know who's not indigenous to this land. So again, it's about resources, it's about land rights, it's about civil rights, it's about humanity rights, it's about all breaking all the treaty rights. It goes way deeper than just the easement of this Army Corps of Engineers trying to remove all the water protectors for February the 22nd, because essentially they just want this to go away so they can profit and destroy again the land, air, and water and make tons of profits and not care about the people of these United States.
All right.
Well, the country.
We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back. We're talking about pipeline, Dakota Access Pipeline, Standing Rock, and we'll be back after these messages. And if you want to join in the conversation, we might be able to swing that, 816-931-5534. First, these messages.
Angela Davis.
That should serve as a true inspiration for the work that we will do in the future to build these transnational solidarities. Because don't we want to be able to imagine the expansion of freedom and justice in the world?
Alternative Radio, Wednesday, 9 a.m. Building Resistance. Japanese-American internment and the fight against a Muslim registry. On Making Contact, Thursday afternoon at 12:30.
The Riverfront City by the Lake. On this current cast. The Windy City's rivers, the Chicago, Calumet, and Des Plaines, made it a center of commerce by providing a way to transport goods and move wastewater away from downtown. But pollution was the price.
That history is a part of us, but we need to get beyond that a little bit and start telling a story about what the rivers are today and what they can become.
That's Josh Ellis of the Chicago Metropolitan Planning Council. He says now, as the city continues cleaning the water, it's outlining a vision for its rivers. Called Great Rivers Chicago, the initiative includes ideas like a continuous riverfront trail and more pedestrian bridges. Things to help residents take as much pride in the rivers as they do Chicago's famous lakefront. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
And we're back here on Eco Radio KC on your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we've got a different voice up here that one we haven't heard from yet. Sophia is here. And Sophia, you've been up to the camp, is that right?
Yeah.
And tell us, what did you do there?
I helped, like, cook, like, for, like, the people. And I actually made a couple of friends there.
Really? From friends who live up there or from other parts of the country or what?
Like, who live out there too and from other parts of the country.
How cool. That's great. So how long were you there?
Three or 2 days or wow. Four.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well, that's great. So what was it like? What was the weather really cold or?
It was like fine.
When were you there?
September.
Oh, okay. So you were there like pretty early on, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's something else. So were you there, was this over Labor Day weekend or? Yeah, it was?
Yeah, but it's kind of like in the week.
During the week, oh, okay. So that's back when, you know, Labor Day weekend is when those dogs were unleashed on, by private security people were unleashed on.
Day after.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That was the day after that. Yeah. Okay. And would you recommend it to other kids your age to be up there? Would you think it's a worthwhile experience for kids? Is it scary for kids? Were you glad you went?
It could be scary and it, like, could, like, kind of be fun, like, learning about, like, the pipeline and stuff.
Yeah.
And, it could be scary because they could, like, see people being hurt.
Yeah, yeah, that's still good.
And they could make friends like I did.
That's good. Yeah, that's very important. Yeah. That's great. You did a great job. Yeah. Anything else you want to share with us, Sophia?
And I want to tell you why we're stopping the pipeline.
Okay.
And it's because they're going to put, like, oil in our water, and it could make us very sick. And I think that's all.
No. Okay, well said. I don't think I could have said it any better than that. Yeah, so thanks. Thanks for sharing with us. That's really nice. We appreciate the young people getting so involved. So that's a wonderful thing. And so again, we've been talking about pipelines. Monique, you've got a book of poetry coming out. It's not out yet, is it?
No, it'll be being released March this next month. So I wrote the majority of the book while I was up there the last time. I was basically digging tents out of the snow during the day, except for the 2 days that I went to the UN hearing. And so it was pretty much I would wake up and make some breakfast for myself and then cart my cooler and my shovel around and dig things out of the snow and the ice. So at night I would go sit in the dome. There's a big white dome kind of in the center of camp. And they have wood stoves, and while I was there, it was not very populated, so it was the perfect place to cook my socks at night so that they wouldn't freeze on my feet during the evening. So I would, you know, because I'd be very sweaty from digging everything out of the snow, and it's a special kind of underworld to be coated in sweat and also freezing. Mm-hmm. So I would take my book in there and write during the evening. So the book is based on my experiences at Standing Rock and, you know, kind of my own history and my own family. And, you know, my ancestral land right now is being attacked by hydraulic fracking in Ocate in New Mexico. So it was actually Mora County, it's a county of 5,000 that banned hydraulic fracking in their county. That's since been overturned by a federal judge. So, you know, this fight is everywhere, and we need to have everyone be aware of it because it's happening in Iowa, it's happening in Florida, it's happening in North Dakota, it's happening in New Mexico and Arizona, everywhere. And we need everyone to be aware of the extensive damage that this is already doing. We've already had, I think, what, two pipeline bursts in Kansas City already this past year? So, like we said, it's not if the pipeline bursts, it's when the pipeline bursts.
Mm.
So we need to band together and, you know, say no to these corporate profiteers that are ruining our, you know, our Pachamama, our Mother Earth. So.
Do you guys have, I'm sure people who are listening have been inspired by a lot of the words, especially what Sophia had to say. A lot of the words you had to share. If someone has been newly inspired by your words, what would you suggest they do next? Or is there, do you have organizations of your own that people should contact, or what would you suggest? And I'm opening it up to all of you.
Right now, we started with our Indigenous Nation Alliance, trying to unite anyone that is trying for the greater good. It's a nonprofit organization started out of Oklahoma. And basically, if somebody is inspired to get involved with Standing Rock or the Oshete, Oyate, to protect and stop pipelines, is what we can do here as a collective conscience here in each city is a simple thing is bring your own bags to the grocery stores and stop using plastic bags. Try to use your own containers when you're filling up your coffee, when you're getting soda, these types of things, trying to avoid going to, I know it's a big one, but stop going to fast foods, buy local, stop supporting corporations. A thing that we did forget is what we're also doing is we're divesting, taking all of our money out of banks that are funding these pipelines, which is mainly Wells Fargo, Citibank, Bank of America, U.S. Bank, and all these banks that are investing. And Wells Fargo, I want to hats off to everyone that took all their money out of Wells Fargo, is shutting down 400 banks across the United States. So the best way to stop these corporations is stop investing in them and stop. They're only going to listen to us if you're affecting their pocketbook.
Mm.
You know, grow your own food, start raising chickens, you know, these types of things, commute, ride a bike, a lot of things, you know, demand hemp. I mean, hemp could save this world with the amounts of products that it can provide. It can provide lumber, it can provide oil, it can provide fuel, it can provide rope, it can provide clothes.
That's right.
You know, these types of things. That
we have a caller on the air. So, caller, you're on the air, and state your name, where you're calling from, and what your question is.
My name is Brooke, and I'm calling from McLeod, Kansas. And my question is, comment and then a question. I feel like not only is this a crime against the earth, but it's a crime against humanity and the way that people have been treated up there. I feel like we can't let this go, and I'm wondering if there are plans to take legal action for these crimes. I mean, so that the law enforcement can't continue to do this. Do you guys have lawyers? Do you have any plans on like making people be accountable for the way they've treated other human beings?
Okay, we'll answer that, and we'll let you hang up so you can hear their answer. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
All right. Did you guys hear that? Real,
yeah.
And we're running slow on time, so kind of make it.
The Standing Rock has a legal team that is pretty much dedicated to taking care of primarily the indigenous protectors that are taken to jail, and the tribes have filed various lawsuits. Unfortunately, while we have appealed to the UN, the United States was one of two countries that did not sign the rights of the indigenous peoples draft that they did. So there really isn't any sort of way that we could take them to the International Court of Justice. The last time that the U.S. was taken was by Mexico, and it sort of, after that, was understood that that would never happen again. So unfortunately, until we have more information on like the people that have been poisoned and the other things that we've been exposed to, it's kind of hard to build any sort of legal case like that that would have any sort of standing.
I would also add KKFI's own attorney, Robin Martinez, is acting as a volunteer lawyer, volunteer coordinator for attorneys to help out with that. And so if there are any attorneys that want to help, you can contact Robin Martinez here in Kansas City.
And I want to say that I really appreciate, I can hear your heart in this. And I appreciate you listening to this. And this is a movement, not just a series of actions. And all of us are doing whatever we can. So my suggestion is, you know, find information, look for connections, continue to reach out. And this is going to continue on. We need you. I hear your heart. Also, we have a couple of sites in town, Standing Rock sites. Also, we have a water protectors mobilization Facebook site. So continue to reach out, and we will work on this. And I so much appreciate that you're lifting your voice and you're speaking with your heart. This is in the this is moving, and daily things are changing. We have to continue to try to hold the system accountable. But there is no magic attorney. There is no magic program. There is no one group right now that is doing it. It's going to take you and your heart and all of us to continue to shed light on what's happened in North Dakota, to shed light on what's happening to Indigenous people all over.
All right. Well, thank you. We're just about out of time. We've got a report from Iowa about what's going on with the pipeline there coming up, but just a couple of events. There's a composting and organics compost to create a sustainable landscape workshop, 10 to 2, at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center at 4750 Truce. That's on March 9th. And then there is a Master Gardener Spring Seminar at Rockhurst University at March 11th from 8 to 3:45 p.m. We're going to go out now with this report from our sister station in Ames, Iowa, KHOI. Thank you, everybody. And the podcast will be up shortly.
I'm Ursula Rudenberg. We wanted to bring you a brief update on the Dakota Access Pipeline story here in Iowa. We hear a lot about North Dakota, but the story continues here in Iowa as well. On Wednesday, the Ames Tribune reported that the Polk County District Court of Iowa had rejected a joint lawsuit by the Sierra Club and a group of Iowa landowners who objected to the pipeline going through their land. They had filed suit against the Iowa Utilities Board and Dakota Access Pipeline. The district court ruled that the Iowa Utilities Board had not violated law in designating Dakota Access Pipeline as a utility, thus making the land subject to seizure by eminent domain. Among the landowners filing the lawsuit were Dick and Judy Lamb. We've spoken to them in the past about this issue, and the Lambs live in Iowa City, but they own land in eastern Boone County. If you take Highway 30 west of Ames, you will know their property because there's a large semi-trailer there with the words "Stopped Eminent Domain Abuse" written on the sides of the trailer. We have Dick and Judy Lamb on the phone now. Welcome back to Local Talk, Dick and Judy.
Hi, Ursula. Good to talk to you again.
Hi. Dick, tell us what happened.
At the court hearing, the judge said he would rule as soon as he could, and about a month and a half later, we did get the ruling, and we lost. We were not surprised by this particularly, and we're not deterred by it either.
Why weren't you surprised?
Well, it's an uphill battle. We know that. But district court judges, we have come to understand, are particularly reluctant to override state agencies. It is the expertise resides with those agencies, at least that's the theory, and so they're reluctant. Now,
so
we think we have a better chance at the Iowa Supreme Court.
So the state agency is the Iowa Utilities Board in this case?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. correct. Uh-huh.
So what happens now?
Well, we wait. We will appeal the decision. That has to be filed within 30 days of the written decision here by the judge. And then we'll get notice that either the case will be heard at the Iowa Supreme Court or the Iowa Supreme Court will remand that to the Iowa Court of Appeals. We don't know which will happen. I would speculate perhaps that because of the importance and size of this case, it might just be heard immediately by the Iowa Supreme Court.
So what is the time frame for all this?
Don't know.
Uh-huh. Now, do you think that the court was influenced at all by the fact that there was an executive order regarding the pipeline in North Dakota to go ahead with the project, even though there had been, after there had been a hold put on President Obama to do an environmental impact statement?
Just don't know that either. You know, uh-huh. I'm sure judges don't work in a vacuum. They're aware of what happens, what the mood is. Supposedly they're above all that, but it certainly didn't help, of course, that the direction changed at the presidential level.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's hard for us to imagine what this actually means on the ground. Has the pipeline been laid through your land already?
Oh, it's been a long time ago. As soon as we asked to have a stay put on the construction, and as soon as the judge denied that stay, they were immediately there digging in our ground.
Uh-huh. This is Judy Lamb speaking.
Yes.
So they went ahead and put the pipeline through the land?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And now, on what basis are you actually yourselves objecting to the pipeline on your land? I understand the legal argument you're making that this is not a utility and therefore the state doesn't have the right to use eminent domain to take the land. But why? Tell us why this actually is detrimental to your land, why you're objecting.
Well, there are just many reasons why we object. From the perspective of a landowner, it's just the thought that a private company can come in and simply for their own profit take our land away from us. And that's what happened here. Keep in mind, this outfit in Texas, incorporated under the loose laws of Delaware, has never done anything for Iowa, never paid any taxes here, owes us nothing, and yet they were able to succeed in getting the police power of the state to simply take people's land. And I think people understand we object to that. See, our land ripped up by these big machineries, and it was a big path, about 150 feet wide, where they cut down the crops and ripped up the soil. And it just that damage alone will be many years recovering. It was in many ways, I think, like a home violation. People report when their home is robbed to see this kind of damage inflicted on their own property, particularly in a case like ours. It's been in the family for years and years. My grandfather purchased that farm in the 1870s. So we have strong personal feelings, just to start the list with.
And what was the land being used for that was used, that now was dug up?
It was corn and soybeans.
Uh-huh. A working farm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Uh-huh. So this was basically a crop field.
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And now, what does it look like now?
It looks good. I mean, I will say that the workers probably did the best they could to restore it. Now, looks are deceiving. If you were just look at it, the cover crop that would be there isn't growing because it got to be too late in the season to replant. But it doesn't look bad, but it's a bit of a misconception to think that you can do that kind of damage and simply scoop up the topsoil, put it back, and everything is back to the way it was. That is far from the case.
Mm-hmm. But as I understand, nobody's using the pipeline yet because it's not completed in North Dakota. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So right now it's just basically an empty pipeline going through your land?
Right.
That's the size of it, and we hope to keep it that way.
So what happens if you win your lawsuit? Are they then required to take the pipeline out again, or what happens then?
That could very well be. You know, it's probably a little hard to speculate on what the court might order. But I think if we won, the most likely outcome is that they would indeed have to take it out of our land, root it around, and carrying that to what probably might happen is that anyone whose land not only was condemned, as ours was, but who sold under the duress of condemnation might in fact say that their particular easement was also ineligible for purchase by the pipeline company.
Yeah.
And they have a right to require it to be taken out. So in right. effect, it could stop the whole thing. That could be the end of the pipeline if we win.
Mm-hmm. Although the way the court is moving, I'm afraid that the oil will be flowing before it's taken to the Supreme Court.
Right. You used an interesting word, condemned. Explain that. Your land was condemned?
Right. Most of the landowners sold willing easements. Now, willing, if we could put in parentheses, or I mean in quotes, because it was under the threat of condemnation. But we elected to actually let them condemn it, which means we got a summon, much like a criminal would, that there would be a hearing, and the hearing board condemned it, and they took it from us. So it was condemning just like is done for the justified purpose of building a road or a water line or something like that.
So that's a term that's used as part of the eminent domain process?
Right.
Uh-huh. Yes. That eminent domain means you can condemn.
Uh-huh. But it's a hard word for you to hear, you know, with land that you're, I mean, it's just, a, makes it sound like
indeed
a house
it
that's
is.
Falling
and,
down.
You know, and it's funny, I mean, when that process server comes to your door, you do almost feel like a condemned criminal.
Uh-huh. Wow. So do you get payment for the use of your land?
We get a one-time payment for the easement through our land.
And was the fact that you are suing and refusing to cooperate willingly, does that affect the level of the payment that you get?
Yes.
Well, this particular lawsuit isn't about the payment.
Right.
It's about questioning the right to do it at all. So we are separately suing them for the damage award they gave, which we consider to be way low for what they've done. But this particular lawsuit is about the broader constitutional issue.
Uh-huh. So there's a separate case going on regarding that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many people, this was basically a joint lawsuit, how many people actually, landowners in Iowa, were part of the suit?
I think it's about a dozen. There were some that dropped out over time. I think we started with about 15, and at this point, something in the nature of 10 to 12, plus the Sierra Club.
The Sierra Club. And everybody plans to continue with the appeal?
As far as we know, uh-huh. Everybody has.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, thank you for the update. And Judy, it sounded like you were under the impression that this might go ahead before this is resolved, that they might go ahead and actually start using the pipeline.
Well, they haven't scheduled of course, they haven't filed with this for the appeal yet. And from what they're saying from North Dakota is that this pipeline will be finished before 30 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's okay. My fear is that uh-huh. Oil will be flowing.
Okay.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that it can't be stopped.
We can always turn it off again, I guess. But
Yeah.
Well, we're speaking with Dick and Judy Lamb. They own land here in Boone County, and they're one of the folks that own land where the pipeline has been laid, and they've been suing the State of Iowa Utilities Board and Dakota Access Pipeline, objecting to this. And sounds like it's a process that may go on for you for quite a while. And I appreciate you giving us an update on what's happening here in Iowa. The pipeline doesn't just affect North Dakota. It goes through the entire Midwest, you know, and including going right through here through Ames. So thank you for giving us an update on what's happening. And we probably will be speaking with you again in the future about an ongoing
well,
story.
We're always glad to. It's good to talk to you again, Ursula.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.